Welcome to episode 495 of Fly Away. Over the past few years, we've been reminded time and again how the world relies on travel. From supporting local economies to learning about new cultures, the experience that travel provides helps to make our world smaller and bring us closer together. Here at Outlander Travel, we've been proud to be a small part of bringing that to you through our weekly podcast. My name is George, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander Travel agents Elizabeth, Sandy, and Donna. When you think of Amsterdam, what do you think of? Windmills? Maybe wooden shoes? How about the red light district? You are not alone, but recently half of the Team Outlander descended upon Amsterdam and the surrounding area, including the rest of Holland as well as Belgium. Tonight, we'd like to find out what they experienced and whether or not they recommend this area for your next European vacation. Spoiler alert, they do. So let's get started. Yeah. Windmills wasn't the first thing I thought of when you said Amsterdam.
Let's So you thought red light district? Is that what you thought?
Yeah, no, kind of.
Probably coffee shops.
Well, I decided to leave drugs out of this, but
okay.
I mean, it's legal almost everywhere.
I will
now.
Say that Amsterdam kind of doesn't want you to think of Amsterdam for the red light district. I mean, they're kind of over it. I think
so. I've heard
if
that,
I can
yeah.
speak for all of Amsterdam, I think that they would prefer we move on from that.
So give me a little background on the trip. Why did you go to these two countries?
So ASTA had a river cruise expo. They have this every year. And this year it was in Amsterdam. So I think for all three of us, myself, Sandy, and Donna, that was the original reason that we decided to go. And then there were some post-FAM trips, but also Nexion's President Circle was right after that. So I think Donna and I stayed for that. And then I got invited to do a FAM trip just before it. So tickets to Europe are expensive. So why not spend 3 weeks there when you can? So I feel like after 3 weeks there, I know Holland and Belgium yes. way better than I have mm-hmm. ever known. And I've been, even recently, Sandy and I went last year to the same area, but spending that much time there, I definitely feel a lot more.
It is a cool area, and I ended up there 3 times in a year because of other cruises I did. And so, yeah, I do love it, though. It's really...
It's a nice yeah. area.
Yeah, it's a cool place to visit.
Yeah, it's definitely on my list. I see myself more as a Northern Europe as opposed to a Southern Europe kind of person. I don't know. Maybe it's the heat.
Yeah, you don't like hot, I guess.
No.
Well, I will
hot,
say...
Hot.
I will say we timed it well because when I got there, which was before Sandy and Donna arrived, they said that they had basically just had 2 solid weeks of rain, and it rained, you know, that it rains there. I mean, that is something that happens. So you want to be prepared for it, but we ended up with beautiful weather most of the time we were there.
Yeah. It was unseasonably sunny.
Yes. It was gorgeous.
Yeah. I mean, 50s, I would say, and windy, but nice. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like shorts weather or anything, but it was good.
Yeah. But hey, the sun was out.
Yeah, for parts of it. And it is funny, there's a saying, or at least we were told there was a saying, that when the sun's out, the Dutch are out, because literally the sun will be out for 10 minutes and everyone will be outside. And then yeah. the sun goes away and everybody goes back inside. And it's
bikes everywhere.
Yeah. Yep. So what's the difference between Amsterdam and Holland?
So, and I think so many people get confused about this, and then we'll take that even further and say the Netherlands. So the Netherlands is the country, and then Holland is basically, one could consider it the state or the region. And there is North Holland and South Holland, and then Amsterdam is a city in North Holland. Oh. So so that's probably the easiest way for an American to sort of see it as country, state, city. I don't okay. think politically it's organized exactly that same way, but that's the idea.
All right. And are there really windmills everywhere?
No.
There are in Kinderdijk.
There are a lot. We can talk about Kinderdijk, but that's a museum of windmills. There are windmills. There are more windmills than you would find anywhere else, I think. I mean, I've traveled quite a bit, and I certainly haven't seen as many. There are a lot of modern windmills as well. But we generally think of windmills as generating power, and the primary reason for the old windmills in Holland, and in the Netherlands in general, this is all considered low country, was flooding. It was to pump water. So it wasn't necessarily to generate electricity. And so they sort of served a very different purpose.
About 80% of the country is actually below sea level.
Sea level. Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the coolest things I like about the city of Amsterdam is just the engineering that went into building that city all those hundreds of years ago, and it's still standing, and the buildings lean on each other, and you know, like, it's just so cool. Yeah, it's an engineering marvel. Really cool.
Cool. So let's go over some of the highlights of the trip. I'm going to throw out some cities if you just want to touch on a couple of topics for each one. All right. How about Amsterdam?
So I'll just start by saying we already said people don't necessarily think of the parts of Amsterdam that Amsterdam wants you to think of. The other thing is the Anne Frank House. Everybody thinks of that, which is absolutely worth going to. But I've been to Amsterdam 4 or 5 times now, and you're not going to do that every single time you go. It's definitely very moving, very important to go. But I think that one thing that people don't always think about, unless they really know Amsterdam or have done their research, is art. You know, the Dutch masters, the Flemish painters, that's a thing. Rembrandt, Van Gogh, those painters are, is it Vermeer?
Yes.
The girl with the pearl earring. That's like a real thing. And there's museums there that have a lot of this art. So it really is an art capital. Yeah. But then we actually, some of us got to go to the Street Art Museum, which is brand new within the last few years. And that is really impressive. And so Amsterdam sort of has carried on this this tradition of street art. And granted, it's all over the world, and a lot of the artists they feature are from outside of Holland, but they also feature a lot of Dutch artists as well. I should say the Netherlands, a lot of Dutch artists as well. So it's definitely a place that's keeping up with the times. And so if you aren't going just for the red light district scene, there's plenty to do during the day as well, with the museums and the nightlife in general, not just the coffee shops.
But the thing is you want to also make sure that you make arrangements ahead of time. Because I went to Amsterdam twice trying to get into the Van Gogh Museum in order to see it. And I swore, this being my third time there, I'm like, you know what? I am going. So I booked my tickets months and months in advance. The Rijksmuseum, you're going to wait in lines if you don't have tickets. So it's better to go ahead and make those arrangements ahead of time. That way you know that you're going to see those things that you really want to see.
Same with the Anne Frank House. You have to know, like, exactly how many days in advance on their time zone
yes.
that you need to be logged in to get your tickets for.
Yes, because those third party, if you're getting tickets third party, that's usually a scam.
Yeah.
Good to know.
One thing I did this time in Amsterdam was I took the train a little bit more. And that was cool. Yeah. So whenever we got there, Donna had already got a hotel room, and the hotel was the DoubleTree, which was right by Central Station. So I decided I was just going to take the train from the airport to Central Station and walk over. And you would think it'd be pretty easy. And I have ridden trains in, you know, London and you know, and like New York and stuff, but everything in the airport is in English and it's really easy to get around. The train is different, you know, so you kind of have to, all the trains go to Central Station though. I did buy a ticket to Central Station because I asked the information booth guy and he said that's what I should do. But I actually don't think that's what I should have done. I think I should have just tapped my credit card and gotten out, because someone else I knew did that. And there was construction and the train got diverted and it took her to a different stop and it wouldn't let her out because her ticket didn't have that stop. So she ended up having to tap her card. And if you just tap your card one time, then you get charged for like the whole ride, you know, like the whole line. So, so that was something that was kind of interesting, but we also, there's like little trains that go through the city that we did a little bit of that. And, that was cool too.
The trams are pretty easy to get around.
If you know where you're going,
yeah. You know where you're going, yes.
Yeah, and I will say that a lot of the city names and a lot of the street names look the same. They're not.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of dams and a lot of of tracks and yeah
and dikes. A lot, words are like really long.
Yeah, and so it can be very confusing for sure. But I think that's kind of true with any public transportation. I will say that as we're as we move down the schedule of towns we're going to talk about. When I first arrived, the company that I did this familiarization trip with, they actually suggested we take the train. So arrive in the airport, take the train to Leiden, which is this little town outside of Amsterdam. Well, I shouldn't say little town, it's a city. I was like, I don't know that I would tell my clients to do this unless they were just really, really, really well-traveled. Mm-hmm. Not everybody's really comfortable with public transportation. Now, we were a bunch of travel agents, so in theory, we're comfortable with it. But I can tell you that one person took one look at the trains and said, okay, I'll find a taxi. And it was about $100 bucks for her to taxi out. But she was like, I have got my suitcase. I don't want to deal with it. Another person who shall remain nameless, but her name rhymes with Bluck, took the train to the wrong city because of the construction that was going on. She got on the train, but didn't realize it was going to the wrong place. So she ended up in Rotterdam and had to, she did realize it, but once you're there, you're kind of invested. So she had to turn around.
And she knows
public transportation. She lives in Germany.
Oh, yeah.
So it can happen to anyone. I encountered the construction, but I got lucky and didn't get she actually got misdirected. She asked somebody for directions and they told her the wrong thing. So I didn't ask anybody for directions and somehow stumbled into where I was supposed to be. So,
it is a little bit, and even like, I'm a travel agent. You would think I don't mind dragging my bags around on a train, but, when I asked the guy, I was like, okay, now it's asking me if I want a first class ticket. Do I want a first class ticket? He's like, oh yeah, you'll have a place to sit. And I was like, oh, I want that, So I bought the first class ticket. It was only €9 versus like €5.50. So it's not a huge deal, but I get on the train and there's like no first class compartment, like there was nobody asked to see a ticket. There was like these blue seats on this one car and red seats on the one behind. So I just went and sat in the empty red seats. But I was talking to another travel agent who came and sat with me. It was a total waste of an extra couple extra euros. But it is one of those, like, you have to have a certain comfort level with it and just be.
I just took an Uber because I didn't want to mess with my bags. And it was like 40 or 50 euros to get from the airport to basically.
And if I were with a family and I. Because that's another thing. Everybody has to have their own card to tap or buy their own ticket. An Uber would make sense,
But the problem with Ubers in Amsterdam is that there's certain places that cars can't go down this street or something. So you can be somewhere and you can't get an Uber. And it says, oh, we'll go over here. It's like, okay, where is that? How do I get there? I don't know. I'm supposed to meet at this hotel, but...
Even the airport, you have to know where to go to get your Uber because it's
correct. Like, so because they've most of the airports in the U.S. they have areas where Ubers go.
Okay, how about canal boats and tours?
So you'll see there's a theme as we move through Holland and Belgium. There are canals. In every city. But that said, it's totally worth doing a canal boat tour in pretty much any of them because there will be differences. So in Amsterdam, we had, we actually did a canal boat that was more of like a party boat and we weren't even really in the canals. Yeah. They called it a canal boat cruise, but we were more in open water, some of the bigger waterways around Amsterdam. But then you can do the smaller ones that go under the bridges and, you can look out for that houseboat from Ted Lasso or whatever. But then in other towns, like in Utrecht, the canals were actually, there were cellars by the canals where people used to store their goods for these houses and now they've been turned into restaurants and bars and offices and things like that. So you sort of get the different feel for how each of the different towns incorporated the canals into their design flow. And so it is worth a canal boat tour, you know, it's a very interesting way to see any of the cities. Sometimes you're really down low, sometimes you're up higher. In Ghent, we were really kind of low. So we're looking up at everybody instead of, you know, being sort of eye level. So it's really interesting.
But you can get a lot of history that way and talking about the architecture and the city itself. So it's a great, easy, like 1 or 2 hour trek.
Yep.
So let's talk about the most exciting thing in Amsterdam, the nightlife. Now, I know the three of you, which means you were all in bed by 9:30. So
we did that party boat.
We did do that. There's this one bar that Donna had been trying to get into her other two times, so we managed to make it to that.
Yep, it was finally open.
Was it the ice bar? Which one was
the Delirium bar?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's right on the water. Yeah.
Yeah. And there are, that's the thing too. So the red light district is someplace where you absolutely can find lots of nightlife, including live music, that sort of thing. But there's also some great bars in Amsterdam. There's a very famous ice bar in Amsterdam. There's also actually at the Doubletree where Sandy and Robin were, there's a wonderful rooftop bar there, considered probably one of the best at the top of the Doubletree. So
it was a very nice place to visit.
It was super cool. Yeah. Really cool.
All right, let's move on to the next cities, and that would be Leiden and Utrecht.
Yep, and I just sort of lumped these together because they had some similarities. And then one thing that we did that I think people don't really think to do, there's De Haar Castle is out in the countryside. And this is actually a castle, but that has some modern, it was designed to look like an old castle, and it was built on the ruins of an old castle, but it had modern conveniences, including a modern kitchen, things like that. And it was owned by a private family for up until very recently. And they would have parties here. And so like Sean Connery and like the sort of Hollywood elite, Joan Collins, would stay there in the month of September. It was almost like a hunting lodge / I don't know, murder mystery sort of castle? But the castle is really cool and it's in great shape for a castle. You know, a lot of times castles are a little bit run down, but it's sort of a blend of a castle and a manor home. And so that was really interesting to see and not something I normally would have taken myself to, but that was something they did as part of our familiarization trip. And I would absolutely recommend taking a day trip out there now that I've seen it and been.
Can you stay there?
In the castle? No, the castle's been turned over to a foundation. The guide said that the family still gets to stay there in the month of September. And so they still do that. But I don't know if they have celebrities or anything. I don't know if Brad Pitt comes out and stays there, but they still use it as sort of a private playground. But all the money goes into the foundation for it. So
nice.
And I hear there's canals there too.
Yeah, there are. We already sort of touched on that. But also beer. So that's the thing about this area of the world is, especially in Belgium, but it spills over into the Netherlands as well. Great beer production and a lot of innovative beer production. And so we got to go do a beer tasting in a restaurant that was that basically had one of these cellars where that's where they brewed the beer down by the canals. So basically we could sit at one of these doors that looked right out over the canal. We were in this old cellar tasting beer with cats. They had a brewery cat there.
Nice. So, yeah. That's funny. Usually it's like brewery dogs.
Yeah, no brewery cats. Cats keep away the vermin, so they're good.
That is true.
Yep. Nice. All right, next we're on to Rotterdam.
Yeah, and I didn't put these necessarily in an order that you would go visit, but we did go to Rotterdam, and this was actually something that Donna and I both did. Did we do the same thing, Donna? I don't remember if you were with me.
No, I did the basically an art. It was a walk through the town, and Rotterdam is one of those cities that was almost completely devastated by World War II. Mm-hmm. It had been pretty much leveled. There were only a couple of buildings left standing. So they call it the Manhattan on the Maas because it's one of the only cities in the Netherlands that actually has skyscrapers. And that's where they do all, there's a lot of business that goes on there. so there's these huge skyscrapers and everything, and it's, like I said, everything is post-World War II, so it's very modern architecture. They've got these houses that are basically up on their cube houses, but they're up on their corner.
Yeah,
and you have to have custom furniture in order to have it. They've got these all these modern sculptures. They're really into modern art and public art. So this is a great city to visit, and it's a huge contrast as to the other parts of the Netherlands and Belgium.
But just outside of Rotterdam is Delft, which is the home of the blue and white pottery that you that Holland is famous for.
Okay.
Very old factories there, basically an industry that started as a way to copy the more expensive Chinese porcelain. It's not porcelain, it's ceramic. So I got a chance to paint my own tile, which was kind of a cool workshop. They sort of explained the basics to you, and we got to see an artist actually at work, a real artist at work, and then we got to try our hand at doing it. Mine actually turned out pretty well. I don't have it here with me, but I made a little Dutch boy and girl kissing. It's a little, yeah, it's very cute. I actually was pleased with how it turned out. So yeah, from the modern city of Rotterdam, just you go a short ways and there's Delft. And then also the Holland America line started in Rotterdam, and the original building that many, many thousands, I dare I say tens of thousands of people immigrated to US from this building that is now a hotel, but it's a very prominent building. You see it as you're sailing in and out of Rotterdam, and the old Rotterdam is docked there and serves as a hotel and an event center as well. So we actually, it was one little bonus of having a whole bunch of travel agents on board your river cruise, is the captain actually sailed us right by the ship so that we could see it. Like, we sailed right by it. This is one of the old Holland America ships that's basically been repurposed. So
yes,
little nerdy moment. It was really cool.
That is cool.
Especially with the Holland America rep right there in the room with us.
Holland America was on board with us, yeah.
All right, and we're on to Kinderdijk, and I hear, did I say that right?
That's Kinderdijk.
Okay, Kinderdijk. We're going to have to do a pronunciation thing in these.
Well, and so I'm saying it still probably wrong, but I think that's how you say it.
Nope, that's how they said it does.
Yeah. Yep, Kinderdijk.
Yeah. All right, so this stop is basically windmills, huh?
Mm-hmm.
This is a UNESCO World Heritage Site and very historic. The windmill, I could talk a little bit about this
because
I did this. But anyway, so these windmills have been there since like the 1600s, 1700s. It's crazy. And it was like Elizabeth had mentioned before, to move the water to, between the canals so that they could live there and not be flooded. But one of the interesting things they said was that there's no room to expand the town. So the town is only going to have like the 800 people that live there, and it's not going to get bigger. Which is kind of interesting. And then they also, the people who ran the windmills lived in the windmills with their families. So there's at least one that you can walk through and see, like, you know, the sleeping quarters and all that. But they don't really do that anymore, but they are still functional. And they said that during World War II, they did need to manually move the windmills to help with the canals and stuff. So it's kind of cool.
It's kind of a lost art. They were saying that they, young people don't want to be windmill keepers or millers.
Mm-hmm.
They're having a hard time finding people to live in the mills.
Or live in the town, I would imagine. Yeah.
Well, the gentleman who did our demonstration is retired. He had retired from his normal corporate job and decided to become a miller. And we asked, we're like, oh, so do you live here? He was like, oh no, my wife would not have it. Like, no, you go do that if you want. That's fine. But we're not living there. So she was not into the rustic life. But it is actually amazing. Again, the technology, if you will, of these windmills is really impressive. And there's one or two that can go either way, in, you know, backwards or forwards. So yeah, they can turn the whole, if you see these windmills, they're sitting on a stone base, right? And you've got the windmill, and that you can turn that thing any which way. I often wondered about this. So how do they build it and know where the wind's going to be? Well, they don't. They literally can turn that whole top part, like it's on a rotating piece. And so they can face the windmill whichever way it needs to face in order to spin. So, and they can do it a half sail or a full sail, two sails full and the other sails empty. Like, they have this whole art form of and science behind knowing how, what they need in order to make it go as fast as they need it to go in order to do what it needs to do.
Yeah,
but it's really cool. And you can bike through it. But it's basically an outdoor museum. So sort of, I won't say a living museum, although that might be accurate as well, but, it's a really nice way to spend the day. And we took a little boat. I don't know if you guys did, but we took a little boat out to the windmill that we saw. Is that what you did? Or did you walk?
I did the walking path. And there were a lot of families on that walking trail too. And there was bike paths and, because it was a sunny day, so they were all outdoors.
Yeah. Everybody was outside.
Yeah. It was cool. Yeah.
All right. We're on to Antwerp.
We are, which means we're on to Belgium. And so, you know what Belgium means? Beer.
Chocolate.
But also chocolate. Yeah. So,
Diamonds.
And diamonds as well. But I couldn't afford that. So,
did you buy more diamonds, Donna?
I did not buy more diamonds because I didn't have time.
Oh, well, I did not have money. So for me, it was the chocolate, which, by the way, I probably spent as much on chocolate as Donna might have spent on a pair of earrings. But it's so good. Yes. And I was lucky enough to get to do two different chocolate workshops, one where I actually got to make chocolate. And I did that one in Antwerp. And then the other, when I say make chocolate, I mean make things out of chocolate. I didn't actually grind up cacao beans and, you know, all that.
Filled molds and
poured molds. And I actually made a big chocolate poo. They gave us a emoji mold. So I have a big chocolate poo.
So it wasn't Winnie?
Yeah, no, it wasn't Winnie. It was the other kind of poo.
did you eat it yet?
No, I can't. I keep looking at it going, I suppose one day I need to eat that. But yeah. So
bring it over next time you come over.
We'll so in Antwerp, I got to do the chocolate workshop, and Donna, you did one too. I think we
did. I did. We were on the same, but we went to different factories.
Yeah, different factories. And then in Bruges, we did one where that was much more educational, where the chocolatier actually did the work, and we just enjoyed the fruits of his labor, so to speak. Antwerp is a really neat city. I've had a chance to go there twice. The first time I went there last year with Sandy is where I got COVID. So I didn't have the best memories of it. But this time I did not get COVID. Yay. So I got to enjoy it a lot more. And there's some really neat bits about it. It also features in a song from the musical Cabaret. So whenever I go to Antwerp, I sing that song in my head. I won't sing it for you guys. But I really wanted to create a reel using that song, and it's not available. And I was kind of mad about that.
Well, maybe you need to be singing it in the background.
But it was a very powerful city in Europe back in the day because of its location for bringing goods in and out and between countries. So it was a huge, which is also one of the reasons diamonds are so big there. So it attracted diamond cutters to cut the diamonds that were coming from all over the rest of the world. So very interesting place and also great nightlife. They have, sort of a bit of a red light district themselves and lots of great restaurants and bars.
Cool. All right. And how about Ghent?
Ghent, or as they say in Flanders, Ghent. I've been practicing good. That. I still don't really have it. There's a big university in Ghent, and actually this was a stop on the river cruise at the end of my trip, and so my oldest son was with me, and the university there is very artsy, and everybody who was out looked like my son, and he was like, these are my people. So he was looking at Ghent and how to get into the University of Ghent. But it was a great little town too. We did a little canal tour where they served us beer that was brewed locally, and then we went to... Not yet. We went to a little bar where we could sample a few other beers. So very proud of their beers there. And honestly, Belgium, I mean, there's beer, there's fries, there's chocolate, and there's waffles.
Yeah.
Just fries? You can't go wrong.
Mm-hmm. Fries, not French fries, frites. The original fries actually came from Belgium. The story goes that the soldiers who received the fries and were like, wow, these are delicious. They heard that people were speaking French, so they called them French fries. But they're actually from Belgium. And there's a very specific way to make the fries, like how long you fry them, how hot the oil is, you heat it up, you double fry them. So yes, quite good. And then there's a whole art to the sauce. There's like 1 million sauces you could put on them as well. But the general preference is mayonnaise. I don't know why.
Oh.
It's super yummy. That's why.
Their mayonnaise is not like our mayonnaise.
It isn't.
It's slightly different. So it's not like Duke's.
You know what, though? It tastes to me like it wants to be ranch. It's like almost ranch.
Okay.
You know?
Well, like,
y'all should just get some ranch.
You should try it at least once, and then you can go, oh, okay.
I did try it. I tried it several times.
Well, no, George. George should try it at least once.
I haven't been there, so.
Yeah.
He'll try it when he goes. Yeah. It's good.
I think we had him at Fries.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Belgium and Fries just didn't connect to me.
Nope, that's where they originated. Yep, for sure.
Interesting. Okay. How about Bruges?
So Bruges is my favorite place in the whole wide world. I want
really?
Yes. 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 I went last summer and already started looking at real estate within 3 hours of being there. It's so walkable. It's all flat. It's so old, like it's so medieval. It feels like you've stepped back in time, yet it's also modern. Like all the stores are higher end. The restaurants are excellent. And as it turns out, the real estate is very expensive. It is one of the more expensive places to live in Europe. Of course it is.
It's really good beer too.
It's really good beer.
Really good chocolate.
This is the place, we've talked about it on the podcast before, that has the chocolate line, which is the chocolatier who invented snortable chocolate for the Rolling Stones. I am not going to try it, but you can.
Oh,
you
wait,
can
Lindsay it. Bought it, right?
Yeah, she even bought the little machine to snort it with, but I don't think she's ever done it, though. So excellent food, great restaurants on every corner.
Yeah. That whole pot full of mussels.
Yes. Mussels are the big thing. Of course, I'm allergic. So, but mussels, and then, the traditional Flemish stew, which is rabbit stew. I will say that when I was there last summer, we sat down at a little restaurant and just ordered Italian food, and the lasagna was so good. And I sent my son a picture of it, of the restaurant that I passed by it. And he was like, did you get the lasagna? I was like, we didn't go in, but he remembered that's where he got the world's best lasagna. And then there is actually a statue that was carved by Michelangelo. It's one of the only pieces of Michelangelo's art outside of Italy. It was actually featured in the movie The Monuments Men. It was the first piece they tried to go and protect from the Nazis. So it's on display in this church. You do need tickets for that if you want to see it. I've been to Bruges now twice, and I haven't gotten to see it actually for real. And then we did a brewery tour. And again, I know we've talked about beer a lot tonight, but the Half Moon Brewery is actually the only brewery operating within the city of Bruges. And they have developed because they grew, but they wanted to stay.
I don't think that's right. Because the Bourgogne de Flanders. I went there.
Okay. Did you see them brewing beer?
Yes. I did.
And it was in Bruges.
In Bruges.
In the city center.
In the city center.
I'm looking this up now.
We're Googling this now.
What was the name of that, Donna?
Bourgogne de Flanders.
Okay. I don't see that. I see the De Halve Maan, which is the half moon.
That's what I'm talking about.
Because I sat there and they had the tanks.
There is a place that had the big beer wall. I don't remember seeing brewing.
That's the beer museum.
Yeah, that's the beer museum. Sorry.
Hold please. Hold please while we settle this.
Okay. Hold on. I'm looking it up.
They do have an address in Bruges. I'm happy to
Yeah. Bourgogne de Flandre. The real taste of Bruges red round beer with a rich creamy finish.
I can see it. I'm looking at where it is. It is south of the... okay, well, then we can leave it up to Half Moon Brewery to prove themselves. They, when they're listening to this podcast, they can let us know, because they said that all the other breweries had been chased out from the high, for the high rents. And so they decided to stay in, but they needed to brew bigger. They needed to brew more beer in order to support the business. And so they developed a beer pipeline. So they literally have a pipeline that runs under the city out to their larger manufacturing and bottling plant. And they brew beer in Bruges and pipe it out to this plant. So it is definitely a one of a kind kind of place.
Yeah, that's
and
cool.
As far as brewery tours go, I've done my fair share of them. And this was by far one of the most unique. We actually got to walk through an old kettle and climb up the stairs out to the roof.
Oh, that would be cool.
So it was very cool. It was super cool. And I was the whole time I'm like, I've done a lot of these tours and this is by far the coolest. It was really, really neat.
I'll have to do that next time I go.
Yeah. So, and it's right downtown. I mean, it is right in town. I saw it last time. It's not far from the Wall of Beer, actually. I saw it last time, but Marcus, my youngest, was like, no, we're not stopping at a brewery, Mom. So this time I did.
Who raised that kid?
I know.
So, wait, adopted. Did you guys go? I know you went to Bruges before the River Cruise Expo, Elizabeth. Did you guys go on your River Cruise to Bruges as well?
It was a stop. That's when, okay. Donna, you went on the stop.
I went
right?
to Ghent because I'd done Bruges the last time. I did a Tulip Time cruise last year. So I did Bruges last year. So I did Ghent this year.
Yeah, Bruges was a day excursion that you could do. But I sort of have a pretty hard rule when it comes to cruising that if I have to take a bus for more than an hour, I'm not going to do it unless it's someplace that I really, you know, like I'll do it to go to Chesky Krumlov, but I won't do it to go to Bruges, especially when I went.
Bruges was your favorite place in the world.
Yeah.
But you were there a week before, right? But
I was there a week before and yeah. I can get there lots of other ways than riding a bus for, you know, maybe if I had been to Ghent before, maybe I would have considered it, but I had not been to Ghent before.
Yes. Yeah. And I wanted to, when I went to Ghent, I wanted to see the Van Eyck altarpiece. So I went to St. Bafts to go see the altarpiece. And you do have to pay to get into the that particular area of the church. But it's an amazing, amazing piece of art.
Their bell tower plays pop music. So like when we were there, we heard Bohemian Rhapsody on their bell tower. Yeah.
Is it like a church that people go to services to? Like
oh yes, well this is it's a huge I don't know if it's a cathedral or a basilica, but no, it's a huge Catholic church, and so they have this piece of art and it's all preserved and it's just an amazing piece.
Nice.
Anything else?
No, I think that covers it. A 3-week trip in almost 40 minutes.
All right. Well, that's our show for this week. Thanks for hanging out with us. Please like our Facebook page, rate us, and be sure to tell your friends about us. You can find our previous episodes on the podcast page of OutlanderTravel.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. On behalf of Donna, Sandy, Elizabeth, and myself, George, thanks for joining us this week. Gotta fly.